You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including why Providence Medford could soon help a lot more people with cancer, why so few kids are going to class, and why a judge ruled against Medford over a bridge. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
And I'm Roman Battaglia, politics, science, and environment reporter.
Roman, you went to Providence Medford Medical Center this week, and it's not because you broke your arm or had some other malady. Why were you there?
Yeah. I actually went to the cancer center there at Providence Medford, and it's because they opened up this new internal radiation suite there. It's pretty cool. They repurposed this old medical records room there. They had to pour this new concrete foundation because they laid a bunch of these really heavy lead bricks to create this giant sealed vault, which, you know, has this really thick door to seal and block the radiation from getting out. So I got to talk with some people who helped run these internal radiation treatments and some of the donors that helped fund this about, you know, why this was important.
And what is internal radiation?
So there's two types of ways you can treat cancer. Well, I mean, there's lots of ways. But with radiation, you can treat it externally or internally. So externally means they have like a beam of radiation that shoots outside of your body to target the radiation. And that's the traditional format. And this internal radiation form is where they put the radiation source as close to the cancer as possible, usually inside of your body. And that is better because it causes less damage to the tissues. It also means less side effects. So it's, you know, in general, better for people.
Yeah, it doesn't have to go through all the other layers to get there. Okay, well, why is a dedicated internal radiation suite needed?
Yeah, so right now, this actually, Providence Medford is the only center that offers this internal radiation treatment between Eugene and Reading. So they serve a lot of patients with this, but they share their current vault with the external radiation people. And that's sort of created this scheduling nightmare. They've talked about having to wheel patients in between external radiation treatments to do it because you have to do all these radiation treatments inside these lead-lined vaults.
So the radiation doesn't get
exactly
out.
Yeah. So the scheduling was a really big pain to manage. Another big issue has been privacy and dignity. So like I mentioned, you're putting the source of the radiation as close to the cancer as possible. And at Providence Medford, they're treating these gynecologic cancers internally. So that involves inserting this pretty large device inside of a woman's reproductive organs, which can be uncomfortable. And right now, because of the space, they have to do that in an operating room somewhere else in the hospital. So they then have to roll the person on a gurney with a blanket covering them to the radiation vault, which can be a pretty uncomfortable experience. The person I talked to who helps run these said that, you know, some of these women have also been victims of sexual assault, so it can be an already traumatizing experience. So having this dedicated room is going to make things a lot better for these women who are getting these treatments. They'll have the same staff the whole time they're doing the treatment. The first time they get it, they'll still have to go to the OR to get the thing inserted. But then if things go well, they can do everything in this new suite so the patient doesn't have to go anywhere. So this is going to allow for a lot more treatments. They said around hundreds more internal radiation treatments, but also because they're not sharing that external radiation vault, that'll allow thousands more external radiation treatments a year.
And so how was this suite paid for?
So it was all paid for through fundraising by philanthropy. So, you know, donations. They also had a fundraiser last year for this. It cost about $2 million. And the hospital foundation kind of helped bring in the money for this project. And I talked to one of the donors about it. You know, it was a lot more work than I thought it was going to be. And that's why it cost so much, because they had to do these really big major renovations to create this new dedicated suite.
Yeah, lead's expensive, apparently.
Yes.
And so right now, the suite is only going to be used to treat gynecological cancers. Is that right?
Yeah. So, you know, right now, that is all Providence Medford treats using internal radiation, so things like cervical or endometrial cancer. But the people I talked to did say that the suite is built to handle more types of internal radiation treatments. So in the future, they could use it for other treatments like skin cancer, or I've read about esophageal cancer, or other things like that, where it's, you know, it's just a better way to do it. But they currently don't have any plans on that right now. They wanted to stress that. So, you know, it is a possibility in the future, but not at the moment.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Roman. Jane, you had a story this week about how kids are struggling to attend school regularly. What's going on there?
So we have some new data that was released this week from the Oregon Department of Education. Comes out every year. It's called the At-a-Glance School and District Profiles and Accountability Details, which is a mouthful. But basically, it's a ton of data that the state collects every year about school districts and individual schools throughout Oregon, which is super interesting. And so one of the things that I thought was most interesting is that kids in Oregon are still really struggling to attend school regularly, even though it's been years since COVID. We obviously saw a huge drop-off in regular attendance during the COVID years, as did, I think, every single other state. But Oregon is really struggling to get back up to where it was. So regular attendance, regular attenders means that you go to school at least 90% of the time.
And we did the math on this. That means you could miss about
17 days of school and still be considered a regular attender. It's that 18, you know, 180 days, 10% is 18 days. That's the problem. So the good news is that statewide, there was an increase this past year in the percentage of kids who regularly attend school. So it's at its highest that it's been since COVID. So good news. The bad news is that it's still 13 percentage points lower than it was pre-COVID. We're at about 66.5% right now. So it's not really good news. That means only about two-thirds of K through 12 students in Oregon are attending school at least 90% of the time, which then affects so many other things like test scores. You know, your scores and your learning are not going to improve if you're not in school. And some districts in our region did a bit better than the state average on this metric. So Grants Pass, for example, was at about 68%. But then some also did worse. So Klamath Falls City Schools had about 57% regular attenders. Coos Bay School District had 59% regular attenders. So that's, you know, barely over half of their students attending school regularly. And then Phoenix High School had actually more chronically absent students than it did regularly attending students.
Oh, wow.
So it's, it's close. It's 49.4 to 50 points, whatever. But half of kids are not going to school at least 90% of the time.
Oh, man. I thought I was bad a few times in high school, and
I'm looking great
right now.
Yeah.
What are schools trying to do to fix this?
That's really the million-dollar question, because it seems like a lot of school districts have already tried and implemented measures that they really hoped would help with this. It's been a problem for years since COVID. I wrote a really similar story about this data a year ago. And then I talked this week with Tricia Evans, who's at the Grants Pass School District, and she says they were really disappointed by these numbers because they've really tried, she says, to implement these new measures that they really hoped would improve attendance, and their percentage of regular attenders dropped since last year, which means things aren't working. But a lot of districts, including Grants Pass, are doing things like frequently checking in on students who aren't attending, phone calls, letters, home visits, working on addressing the problems that might be keeping kids from coming to school. So do they need help getting clothing or food or transportation? Grants Pass has both incentive and accountability plans. She said they even tried partnering with the county's juvenile justice system, which didn't seem to help a whole lot. So it's hard to know what to change from here, at least in talking to Grants Pass. It seems like they're going to kind of keep up with some of their measures. You know, some of them are newer, and so maybe they'll hope that they kick in the long run. But it's interesting because the state also doesn't really seem to have an answer for this. There was a press conference earlier this week, and state officials didn't really have specific answers on how to address this. Charlene Williams is the director of the Oregon Department of Education, and she was talking about rolling up our sleeves and identifying the strategies that are going to work best, but didn't actually name what any of those practices are. Someone from ODE said they haven't reached out to other states that have done better at this to see what they've done so that we can copy what they've done and see if it works here. So, and then there's also this interesting question right now about the value of public school in general. What is the value of a public education? A lot of families are switching to other methods like homeschool, charter schools. So I think schools are really trying to work on how to fix this, encourage people to come to school, and see what measures they can implement at both the state and the district level to get kids in class.
Just make school cool again.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, what else is the data telling us?
There's a ton of interesting stuff in there. If you're a education data nerd like me, we have it linked in my story on our website if anyone's interested, because you can look up school districts, individual schools. They've got stuff about how kids are testing on certain subjects, proficiency scores, on-time graduation, five-year completion, demographics, enrollment, stuff's broken down by grade and ethnicity, staffing. So I spent a lot of time looking over all of the spreadsheets and this stuff, which is super interesting. So there's a lot there. There is some good news, which is that in Oregon, 87%, almost 87% of ninth graders are on track to graduate high school, which is the highest number ever recorded in the state. So that's good news. And again, in our area, there were some districts that did particularly well. Ashland School District has more than 95% of its ninth graders on track to graduate. And again, there are some schools that didn't do as well with this. So Klamath Falls City Schools saw a decline since the previous year. They're down to about 61% of their ninth graders on track to graduate. So there's a ton of interesting data in there.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Jane. Justin, you had a story about a Medford developer winning a federal lawsuit against the city of Medford. What was this case about?
Yeah, so this was about Medford, the city of Medford, requiring this company, CoGap Enterprises, to build some infrastructure as part of this company's ongoing development. So CoGap is a former timber company, which has sort of pivoted to real estate, like, you know, residential and commercial development as the timber industry declined. And it's been building this pretty, good-sized 121-acre development in South Medford, which includes businesses and apartments, all sorts of things for years, really. And they've been building on this site of their former timber mill.
And this is, like, maybe just north of Harry and David.
Yeah, exactly. And so the infrastructure the city wanted this company to build as part of its development was a road and a bridge, which would connect this area to other parts of the city. And this requirement was added on after CoGap submitted a change in zoning for some parts of this development. And the company objected. Basically, CoGap said this road and bridge has nothing to do with their plans. It's just a benefit, really, for the city. So they argued the city was using them to sort of build and fund public infrastructure, which would cost the company around $700,000.
Yeah. And so why did the city say CoGap needed to build this infrastructure? What was their argument?
They argued the changes in this development would increase traffic. So there was a public cost from this development, and this infrastructure was meant to offset that cost. And a district judge actually agreed with the city last year. They ruled in the city's favor after the company brought Medford to court. The judge said the city's requirement for the road and bridge was legal, but CoGap appealed that decision, and it went up to federal court this year. And recently, about a week ago, a Ninth Circuit court judge ruled in favor of CoGap and reversed the district court's decision. And in that judgment, the court notes the city really didn't have evidence for this claim of increased traffic. So they didn't prove there would be this public cost associated with the development.
Okay. So there still could be instances where developers are expected to pay for these sorts of things.
Right, exactly.
Why did you choose to cover this story, Justin?
Well, so federal court cases in our backyard are usually interesting. You know, in the Ninth Circuit Court covers just such a wide area, a lot of western states. And so rulings there can have implications for a really large population of people.
Washington, California,
yeah,
Nevada.
Arizona.
Yeah.
You know, the attorney that represented CoGap in this case said it was the first Ninth Circuit Court ruling on what's called the Nolan-Dolan test for exaction, which I got to learn all about for this story.
Wow.
And
tell us more.
Yeah, so part of that test and what was really applicable in this case was a requirement that land use regulations be proportional in cost to a development's impact. So a city can't make a change in a development or require something that's going to cost a lot of money and not be proportional to the public cost of that development, which is what Medford failed to show. And so this attorney said that other local governments after this ruling could be a bit more hesitant after this Medford loss to require similar infrastructure requirements.
Okay, thank you, Justin. And Roman, we just have a few minutes for our last story here. So keep it brief. You reported on some funding provided to a faith-based homeless services organization to do a little something different in Reading. What is this group and what's the money going toward?
Yeah, this is a Good News Rescue Mission. So they're basically expanding their work for homelessness services and stuff with this 75-bed residential treatment facility. So they had gotten a $17.8 million grant, and then the county matched that with $2.2 million this week, which is why we reported on it. So this is going to expand a lot of the substance use disorder treatment options here in the county, because that's a major issue in Shasta County. So that's going to kind of help fill in the gap, offer these 30 to 90-day treatment programs for people, and they're going to be able to fully fund it through Medi-Cal billing and private donations there. So they talked about how this is going to be a big benefit to kind of offer that substance use treatment in the area. And that's going to be online by the end of 2027.
Okay. And if people want to find out more, they can go to our website, ijpr.org, and read that story. That's it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's ijpr.org. And you can help find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or on your favorite podcast platform.